Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Hope you're all having a great day wherever you are. It is that time of the week again for another sit down. I am Jeff Nadeau. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Hope you had plenty of food and great conversation, and you're able to see your family here on one of the great holidays we have in our country. But it is that time of the week, and it is a busy time for me. I've got a lot going on right now. I've got my big fight next week. We'll talk about that a little bit towards the end of the show. But just me this week, felt like the subject matter, at least this week, it was very complex, very deep. And it is one of my favorite things to talk about. So I felt like I'd go at it alone. Blackjack will be back next week. Today, we got a great show planned. We're going to go a little bit away from the Italians. We've talked about some Irish on this show, Jewish folks. Talked about black drug dealers. Today, we're going to talk about the Asians. We're going to talk about Chinatown. And we're going to talk about the de facto godfather and head of Chinatown for many years, Benny Ong. Benny Ong ruled Chinatown with an iron fist, and he really was able to run Chinatown through the auspice of the Hip Sing Tong, which is the Hip Sing Association. And it was really initially created as a way to help immigrant families with jobs and with money and things of that nature. But it quickly developed a criminal element to it. And that was how the Chinese mafia was able to really control Chinatown. Remember, in most ethnic enclaves, most communities are, first of all, scared of the police. They don't like the police. And, you know, in the Chinese neighborhoods, they were more or less just not really wanted to talk to anyone that wasn't Chinese. So Benny Ong and the Tongs realized quickly that they could dominate these places. They could extort people. They could take money from the community. And most of it would be under the auspice of protection, of which they were able to make tons of money. And that would then move to drug dealing, that would move to prostitution, that would move to gambling. Everything in Chinatown was run by these Tongs or associations, if you will. And Benny Ong was the leader of the most powerful Tong, the Hip Sing. So we'll talk about Benny Ong's life. We'll talk about really the different quarrels that he got in his time as the leader of the Hip Sing and really coming out on top in the end. We'll also talk a little bit more about just the overall connections that they had to Italian organized crime and the similarities that I've always found with the Asian organized crime, particularly in Chinatown, very similar to the Italians. And why wouldn't they be? They're so close to each other from a geographical standpoint in New York City. And we'll talk about what's going on today in Chinatown. Before we get to that, though, no Q&As, no nothing today. We're just going to get into the episode. And I urge you, if you're new and checking out the show, and I want to thank all the new people we have. We get our metrics and we're continuing to grow. So if you're checking into the show for the first time, welcome. We appreciate you. And if you're listening every week, we appreciate you as well, obviously. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you hit the subscribe button and leave us a deserved rating, maybe a review. Also, check us out on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. And you can check us out on YouTube as well. Just search the Sit Down. Let's get into it. Let's talk about Benny Ong and Chinatown on the sit down. And by the way, I will say this is one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to organized crime. Benny Ong was born Un Kai Soi in 1907. His birth date is unknown. He'd be born in Canton, which is present day Guangzhou. And when we look at the Cantonese, which is a type of Chinese people, they were very much people that were emigrating to New York City. Most of Chinatown is Cantonese, and Benny Ong was Cantonese. He would be the seventh of nine sons, and that would give him the nickname many years later of Uncle Seven. Benny Ong, his father was a bricklayer who really struggled for work back then, and really for most Chinese, really from the 1850s all the way into the 1930s, many were coming to America with a chance for a better life. China was a tough place to live. And when we look at New York, one of the things that would be created pretty quick in New York City, really even before Benny Ong came, was was what they would call tongs, T-O-N-G-S. A tong is basically a civic organization that was set up to help the people that were coming into these areas. And they were helping kind of help them get into to things, acclimate to the community, maybe open a business or get some money or you know, get immigration things handled, really just a chamber of commerce, if you will. And when you translate Hip Sing in Cantonese, it actually translates to cooperating for success. So it was like a co-op, if you will, for residents in all these different communities. Now, if you go to Seattle or San Francisco or Philadelphia today, there are still Hip Sing organizations, including Chinatown. And it's important to first, when we talk about Asian organized crime, it's important to understand what the Hip Sing is and why it was so important. Keep in mind, the Hip Sing, though, would develop a criminal element, and it would really be a mask for Asians to really hurt their own people. There was a strong criminal element where, you know, not only were they handling business, they were helping people, but they were also running gambling dens, prostitution rackets, extortion, and it was a criminal element to it. One of the first known overseers of the Hip Sing Tong was an individual called Sa Wing Mok. They called him Mok Duck. He actually would come over to the United States in 1890, and he would settle in Chinatown, and he would basically take over the Hip Sing, and he would eventually start warring with another Tong in Chinatown called the Ong Long Tong. And these two would beef really for decades. And that's really where we pick up the Benny Ong story, because in 1920 at 13, Benny Ong would join several of his brothers in Chinatown and come to the United States. His older brother actually had already worked in New York City. He was working directly for the Hip Sing Tong. He would become a very much higher up in the organization. And when Benny came to America, he would work in a laundromat and earn just $2 a week. And he would kind of see, as we've talked about time and time again, he would see some of these other guys, like his brother, kind of doing well, making money. And he wanted to kind of do that himself. Keep in mind, you know, really in the 1880s, 90s, even into the early 1900s and 1910s, Chinatown was an area like many other ethnic communities. It was really bereft of anything legitimate. I mean, Chinatown especially, it was a real desolate red light type of district, frankly. There was hookers everywhere. There was drug dens everywhere. There was opium smoking. There was gambling. It was a real den of iniquity, if you will. And, you know, the Tongs came in and really kind of cleaned that up and made it kind of legitimate and pulled it out. And they kind of said, you know, we're not going to let that happen. And if it's going to happen, it's not going to be out in the open. We're going to control it. Benny Ong's brother, Sam, as I said, would become a higher up in the Hip Sing Tong. And Benny would join at 18. He would go to work as kind of an overseer. He would make sure gambling dens were being protected. He would collect extortion rackets, and he would do petty crimes, just like any young criminal gangster would do. It would be a kind of an old wives' tale, but it was always true that in Benny Ong's early age, he was known to be very hot-headed. He had a temper. He had a problem with rage, and he had a gambling problem. He was a gender gambler, like we see. I mean, John Gotti was hot-headed and had a gambling problem. But Benny Ong had a gambling problem. And one night, he was at a gambling den. He got into a beef. It was said at one point that Benny Ong would run out of money, go out and rob people, and then come back and gamble the rest of the money away. He was a known gambler. He would get into a beef with when he stuck up an unlong card game, and the beef would really kind of change his life. He would open fire, him and his cohorts, and one individual would die. All of his cohorts got away. The only one that didn't was Benny Ong. Benny Ong would be held down, and he would end up getting charged with murder. He would ultimately get 25 years in state prison in 1935 and would end up going to jail. He would head up to Sing Sing and serve his sentence. Now, while he was away, that would be good for the Ong brothers, because Benny's brother Sam would control and gain control of the Hip Sing Tong. And When Benny got out, it was obviously big news for him. In 1952, Benny Ong would be released from state prison and head on back to Chinatown. He would basically serve as the second in command to his brother, Sam, and he would live right above the Hip Sing Tong at 15 Pell Street in Chinatown. And if you go to 15 Pell today, the Hip Sing is still there. There was an interesting thing going on, though, in Chinatown, and this would start to really affect the landscape of what Chinatown was. Chinatown was starting to get families popping up. It had become not just a red light district, but women, Chinese women, were coming over in the mid-40s and becoming housewives. They were becoming people that men wanted to build families with. And we started seeing the population increase. And what that would do is we started figuring out that we would eventually get young Chinese men, and they would be more brash and more arrogant and really wanted to go against everything that the older predecessors wanted. And we'd also see an influx of Vietnamese. We saw an influx of different Asians coming into not only Chinatown, but right near Chinatown. And this would all play a big role in the future of what Chinatown would look like. And it would really turn it in to one of the most dangerous places in New York City. In 1964, Benny Ong's brother, Sam, would die. He at this point was in his 60s, and there was really no other choice, but Benny would take the Hip Sing over, and why wouldn't he? At one point, under the control of Benny Ong, every single business in Chinatown was paying extortion to Benny Ong and the Hip Sing. And that was gigantic. I mean, keep in mind, you know, you're making off some businesses $5,000 to $10,000 a week. It was big money. And most of these businesses were willing to pay. They looked at it as the cost of doing business, just like any other ethnic community. And they're not going to go to the police. And if you don't pay, well, we'll just light your business on fire. We'll firebomb it, or we'll throw bricks through it and shoot people inside. That's what the thought was. And by the end of the 60s, Benny would become the godfather, and he wouldn't relinquish that title for many years. What the Hip Sing and the Ong Longs were starting to do, though, is it was important to start insulating themselves from the growing criminal element that was being created in these gangs. And what they kind of did, and Benny Ong was instrumental in doing this, he would take street gangs and subcontract all the street work out to them. They would do the dirty work. They would handle extortion. They would run gambling. They would run women. They would kill people. They would sell drugs. All that stuff would go on through the gangs. They had a leader, and that would all go up to Benny Ong. So Benny Ong could really insulate himself. And when it comes to both Tongs in New York and Chinatown, there was the Ong Longs and the Hip Sing. The Hip Sings were working with a group called the Flying Dragons. They were run by an individual called Michael the Scientist Chen. Now, Chen was the godson of Benny Ong. He was very much a trusted individual in Ong's organization, and he was known to be a nut. He killed people. He was a dangerous guy. He was also a very cool and patient guy. He was known for being polite, never seemed outrageous or rude, and he did not smoke, drink, or gamble, and was very generous towards others. But he had this side to him that he didn't want to get in front of, for sure. Now, the Ong Long Tong, the rivals of the Hip Sings, they subcontracted their work out to the Ghost Shadows, another gang. And if you've ever been to Chinatown, you know that Chinatown is very small. And it's interesting because there's a guy in the rap game now called China Mac. And China Mac has done many interviews about growing up in Chinatown. And he talked about a story when he was a kid. Now, he would join the Ghost Shadows as a teenager. His father, Michael Yu, who we'll talk about in a little bit, they called him the Fox. He was actually very close to Johnny Yang, Machine Gun Johnny Yang, who we'll get into as well. And he would talk about stories when he was a kid where he would be walking down a street and there would be an arcade on the corner. And he would be told that he can't go to the arcade because if he turned the corner, that would be Ghost Shadows territory. it was that close. That's how close this stuff was to everyone else. And it really became a huge problem in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. These guys are just shooting back and forth at each other. It got kind of out of control. In 1977, though, Benny Ong would have to deal with some of his own problems. Benny Ong would be caught on wiretap bribing two immigrant officials, basically saying to them, look, we'll pay you if you give us, you know, free rein and kind of letting in whoever we want. They don't have to deal with immigration. He would eventually get 8 years. However, he'd only serve about one of those years because he would complain of health issues, and he would return home in the late 70s. Now, during all this, Michael Chen was running the Flying Dragons well. They were making a lot of money, and these Tongs were running everything, and it was all being really run by the Flying Dragons, but they would handle all the good business, and the street gangs would handle the bad business, but it was all good business because it made everybody money. Now, what we'd also have to deal with in Chinatown was rogue groups, right? So you'd have the Ong Longs, you had the Hip Sing, but you also would have people that would become disenchanted with leadership and run in their own way. And that would happen in the early 80s. An individual, Herbert Liu, who was once membered and close to Benny Ong, he decides he's not happy with the leadership in the Flying Dragons and in the Hip Sing. And he would decide, you know what, fuck this, Benny Ong. And he would say, Benny Ong stuck in the 30s. I want my own thing. I'm going to create my own thing. So he decides, I'm going to create my own tongue. And we're going to call it the Freemasons. That makes Ong absolutely furious. And he kind of says, you know what, fuck this guy, he's an enemy. In 1982, Benny Ong would pretty much order individuals shot, and 11 would be shot inside a restaurant in Chinatown. And it wouldn't last long. Herbert Liu would quickly decide, you know what, I'm going to play ball, I'm not interested. I'm going to look the other way, and I'm not going to keep moving on with this. He had rented out an apartment at 52 Broadway, and that would be the headquarters for the Freemasons. Quickly, though, the Freemasons would disappear after Ong just kind of ruled with an iron fist. That's what he did. Now, by 1983, there was starting to become some interesting things that were happening in New York. Obviously, drugs were around, but there was a rule that in Chinatown, they didn't sell drugs in Chinatown. They didn't want their own people hooked on it. So they would sell in the Bowery. They would sell on the Lower East Side. They would go everywhere. They would front drugs to other groups. They were middlemen. Because remember, China white, heroin, that kind of stuff, it was coming over from Asia. And they were great, at least before September 11th, you could easily get drugs into the country. It was not as regulated as it is now. And there was a guy that was making his way throughout the underworld, Michael Chen would have to deal with, and the Benny Ong group would as well. Johnny Eng was making his presence felt. They called him Machine Gun Johnny. He was a major drug trafficker. He was making millions selling China white. He becomes close to Benny Ong. Benny Ong starts to see that, hey, you know what, we can sell this and you know, we can kind of keep ourselves insulated from it. This guy's going to make me money. And there was also rumors that Michael Chen, who led the Flying Dragons, was starting to skim from profits. And on March 13th, 1983, Michael Chen would leave his apartment above Hip Sing and go to a coffee shop adjacent to the credit union. There he would be shot 14 times with a handgun. And the next day his body would be discovered and he died at the scene. Now, a lot of people thought it might be Freemasons and who knows who it might be. It was never really found out, but there were a few things that would happen. This would kind of be like shooting John Gotti or shooting someone in the Gambinos right in front of the Ravenite. You're just not going to get away with it. Keep in mind, Michael Chen's body was literally right outside of the Hip Sing, and Benny Ong was not going to let that happen. He would have had to have sanctioned this thing. Now, it probably was clear that he became disenchanted with Chen's leadership and that he was sick of him skimming money. And maybe he saw a better future with Johnny Yang, but it was clear at that point, Johnny Yang was the controller of the Flying Dragons, and him and Betty Yong would make a lot of money. Obviously, it's pretty simple. One of the other issues that Benny Yong would have throughout his time as basically boss of the Chinese mafia, as I said before, in the 50s and the 60s, we started to see different Asian individuals coming into Chinatown. And one of those groups would be Vietnamese. In 1956, an individual called David Tai would come into the world. He was born in 1956. He'd eventually find his way to New York. And he would, after going to college, weirdly enough, he would become very much connected in the underworld, particularly in the counterfeit watch business. He was doing a lot of flipping fake Rolexes and things of that nature. And he began to get basically a monopoly on Canal Street. And he would make a lot of money to the point where he became a member of the Flying Dragons in 1983. And the problem that he had was he was making money, but it was similar to the Cosa Nostra belief that if you're not full Italian, you can't ever be made. And the Hip Sing had the same thought. The Flying Dragons said, look, we'll let the BT or we'll let the Vietnamese kill people for us and stuff, but they're never going to be higher ups. They're basically coffee boys in our eyes. And David Tai didn't understand that. He's basically saying to himself, well, we're killing people. We're doing what we have to do, but we can never be a part of these people. And as others have, he became disillusioned by Benny Yong. So he decides, you know what? In the late 80s, I'm going to create my own thing. And he, in 1989, would orchestrate the first gathering of his new gang that he would call Born to Kill. And he would be the Dao Lo, if you will. Dao Lo would be your boss. And these guys were young, they were brash, and they were dangerous. And they were not going to be scared off by Benny Yong, maybe like Herbert Liu would. On August 5th, 1989, David Tai would be standing in front of a shopping mall on Canal Street alongside some associates. Two members of the Flying Dragons approached Tai and began insulting him and the gang. Quickly, though, they would run into a mall and they would go retrieve two handguns and proceed to hand to two of the nearby members, telling them to go, quote, shoot those motherfuckers as they ran away. Two individuals would be killed and they were both Flying Dragon members. And, you know, this would create a real conflict with the Hip Sing Tong. And it got to a point where Benny Yong said, look, these guys can do what they do. We're not going to get in the way. In fact, we'll give them some rackets, but we just need them to stop killing everybody and going nuts. So Benny Yong goes to David Tai and says, look, hey, we got to meet. We got to have a negotiation about this. And David Tai basically didn't go to the meeting. He just stood Benny Yong up. Benny Yong took it as, you're my fucking enemy now. You know, I tried to be good to you and this is what you do. The next night, an individual, Vin Vu, who was the right-hand man to David Tai, would be gunned down on a street corner. And that would be a message. Vin Vu was a high up in BTK. And, you know, Benny Yong, there's one thing about him that you can say. He always had the upper hand in all this stuff, and he always had people willing to do his bidding for him. Obviously, in any death, there would be a funeral on July 28th, 1990. The BTK would have a funeral procession that would parade up and down Chinatown. There was up to 250 individuals at the mourning session. Keep in mind, they would walk up and down Mulberry and Bayard Street with the BTK gang banner and, you know, shout things and things of that nature. Benny Yong would kind of be sick and tired of that, and he was sick of these guys. So he would basically tell members of Flying Dragons, hey, go over to Rosedale Memorial Park Cemetery and shoot up the funeral. And people recorded it. News media was there. Luckily, no one was hurt. But, you know, this was something where when you fuck with Benny Hung, we're not going to hit you once or twice. We're going to just keep hitting you until you get the message. There's also thought that it wasn't Benny Hung. It was just Ghost Shadows. They were trying to eliminate them as well. Because keep in mind, the BTK was taking money from both the Hip Sing and the Ong Long Tong. And behind closed doors, they both wanted everyone out of the way. Keep in mind, as all this is going on, Johnny Ang is continuing to sell major amounts of drugs for the Flying Dragons and ultimately for Benny Hung. It would all kind of come crashing down, though, for Johnny Machine Gun Ang in 1989. He would be arrested and flee to Hong Kong, but he would be found that year. He would be extradited and sent back to New York. And in 1992, Johnny Ang would be convicted on 14 counts of heroin smuggling and conspiracy. If you remember earlier, I talked about China Mac. Keep in mind, his own father, Michael Yu, who he has mentioned he does not have a relationship with. Michael Yu was a known cooperator. He would end up testifying against Machine Gun Johnny Ang. And Johnny Ang would end up getting 24 years in prison in 1993. Keep in mind, he was released in 2010, and he is in the wind, as far as the federal government will tell you. Once that happens, the real only group to still deal with is BTK. And that wouldn't last long either. Keep in mind that David Tai and the BTK would be arrested in late 1991. And this would really decimate that gang as well. It was always speculated, did Benny Hung kind of give up them to get them out of the way? It was always something that went down in Chinatown, but it was never been able to be proved. David Tai eventually would have to forfeit a ton of money. He'd ultimately be sentenced to life in prison. David Tai is still alive, as far as I know. He is pretty old at this point. I think he's in his mid to late 60s. And from what I understand, he is a poet, I believe, in prison. He writes poems and things of that nature. And supposedly he's changed his life a little bit. So, you know, for that, that was really the end for Benny Hung. He really would kind of continue to live and be in control as the godfather for the rest of his time with pretty much most solidarity. I mean, there was really no problems after the fact. Obviously, once David Tai and Johnny Ang were out of the way and were gone, Benny could really insulate himself and really just live off of extortion money and things of that nature. He would eventually get into politics. He would front money for candidates. He would urge young Chinese to go into politics and really stand up to anti-communism and talk about China. He would also be very close with civic organizations and different unions that would help Chinese people. But though on August 8th, 1994, Benny Hung would die at the age of 87. Keep in mind, they had a funeral procession in Chinatown, and it was the largest funeral procession ever in the history of Chinatown. By the end, Benny Hung could be talked about in a few different ways. Ultimately, he never went to prison. He was able to insulate himself and allowed things to go on, but it was all connected to everyone else. David Tai got jammed up. Johnny Ang got jammed up. Everyone else got jammed up, but the true puppet master himself, Benny Hung. And I think when we look back at Benny Hung, you have to look at the success that he had for 25-ish years leading the Hip Sing. The Hip Sing have always been a shady criminal organization, and they have been able to find their way through. And when Benny Hung died, it was the last of the bosses in Chinatown. And really since then, you know, Chinatown has really become a different place. Now, Chinatown now is really just pretty simple. Now, are there still people running extortion through there? I mean, I don't know, maybe some places, but it's definitely not as pronounced and as violent as it once was. You'll always have the old school Chinese, but as communities get older, you know, they move out, other people start moving in. And I think eventually we'll see points of our country where the old school neighborhood is no longer around. You know, Chinatown at one point was all Chinese. Now it's mixed. There are white people live there. There are Puerto Ricans that live there. There's all sorts of people that live there. They're not as ethnic as they once were. So, you know, Benny Ong would really kind of fight through. He had multiple people that would try to bring him down, and he was always smart enough to insulate him. Let them deal with the nonsense. They'll be the guys that take all the nonsense and the shrapnel, and I'll sit back and collect my money. It's pretty simple. Benny Ong would be buried, and you know, a lot of people missed Benny Ong. He was a jovial guy. You'd always see him with his fedora on and his raincoat. He was a stone cold gangster, and you know, he probably would say that, well, I'm just a businessman. But deep down, Benny Ong did a lot of bad things. He did a lot of bad things to Chinatown and really exploited the Chinese people. But Chinatown in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s was a fascinating place. It was a dangerous place and it was a violent place. The old Chinatown is gone. And luckily for those residents, that's good news. So just a simple one today, but an interesting one nonetheless. I've always found Chinese organized crime, particularly in this country, to be fascinating. Obviously, you have your Asian gang still around. BTK, the gang created by David Tai, is still around, as far as I know. They have some subsets in certain cities in America. I know they're out in Sacramento, California. I think they're in some southern cities, Dallas, I believe. You have some other gangs as well, Cambodians. You know, obviously, you have the Chinese and Japanese gangs, Yakuza's and things of that nature. But in Chinatown, as far as I know, there's very little going on in there from a criminal element. And look, I'd highly recommend, we kind of went a little bit more deep into the subject. But I know, as I said, China Mac, if you're interested in this subject, China Mac did some great interviews with Vlad TV about his time in the gangs and stuff like that. He mentioned that, you know, he joined the Ghost Shadows really as a way to kind of go against his father, who he didn't have a relationship with and he didn't like. And he would talk about how they would prey on kids. They would do the dirty work. Just really a fascinating story. I know he has some really interesting stuff. So if you ever want to kind of learn more about this stuff, kind of even outside. He has obviously some stories that I don't have. I would definitely recommend you check China Mac out. Really good guy too. Seems to be doing things with his life and trying to do for the good. Keep in mind, I wanted to just quickly talk about the connection with OC, Italian OC, and really the similarities that you see with particularly the organization standpoint. You know, you have the Hip Sing, which is kind of the governing body of a family, and then you have the soldiers and the associates that are like the gang, if you will, like the Hips, like the Flying Dragons or whatever. And even the making ceremony, if you will, there is a similar making ceremony. They actually drink, from what China Mac talked about, he mentioned that they drink snake blood and they pray to the Buddha, which is a very popular Buddhist figure. So there's a lot of similarities between the two, pretty interestingly enough. But if you go to Chinatown now, you'll just see beautiful businesses and Chinese lettering and that sort of thing. But quick one today, as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate all of you. I did want to let everybody know next week, the week of December 8th, we are not going to have a show. I have been traveling. I'm heading down to West Virginia for my fight. And there's just a lot going on. I'm not going to have time to record. So we haven't taken a week off from this show since we started. So felt like it'd be a good time to do it. The next week, we're actually going to get into the nuts and bolts of the Paul Castellano hit. I'm going to attempt to speak to somebody that was there the night that happened. So that'll be interesting. And we'll be back with a regularly scheduled program. Next time you hear from me, I'll either be a winner or a loser. And I think I'm going to be a winner. If you want to buy my fight, you want to check out the pay-per-view. It's not just me fighting. There are 20 different fights that night. You can find it at buyrnr.com, buyrnr.com. You can purchase it now or on the night of the fight, and you'll be able to watch all of our fights. Plus, you'll get to see me fight Jersey Jerry from Barstool live on December 10th. So make sure you check that out. Again, no show the week of the 8th. We'll be back the week of the 15th, though, for another great episode of The Sit Down. As I said, if you want more Sit Down, go check us out on YouTube. Just search The Sit Down, a Mafia History Podcast. You can also check us out on Twitter at The Sit Down 7. I am Jeff Nadeau. Thanks, as always, for listening. Thanks for checking us out. Thanks to all of our sponsors. And please, if you enjoy our show, please check our sponsors out, particularly BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a great resource for if you're struggling or you just want some help with something, either whether it's weight or just you need someone to talk to, go check BetterHelp out now. They have licensed consultants and professionals to help you really quick. If you go to betterhelp.com/sitdown, like the ad says, you're going to get 10% off. So go check that out. You always want the best version of you. So why not? Tony Soprano saw a psychiatrist. Nothing wrong with it. All right, guys, I'm out of here. You guys have a good night. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in a week or so here on The Sit Down.